Hey everyone, welcome to Engaging Walk. Today is the 9th of May and I'm your host, Drake. My wife is still hanging out with the newborn and it's been a really great time getting used to having a newborn in the house and, you know, being a parent for the first time. For those of you who are new to the podcast, Engaging Walk podcast is all about love, marriage, relationships, dating, and family. And we, meaning my wife and I, go out on engaging walks very regularly. It used to be daily, but things have changed, and it's still regularly we go out on walks together. We go out, we enjoy nature, we enjoy the world. We go out and we take that time together to engage with one another and have an engaging walk. We have conversations about deep things, personal things, and always try to find room to learn more about each other, even in marriage, especially in marriage. I think that we can get to a point where we get comfortable that is totally normal, but we have to learn more about each other, and doing new experiences together, seeing new places is what provokes the newness, the novelty, if you will. And coming to see my wife as a mom for the first time, I have learned so much more about her and all those feelings of like, oh, I wonder if how she would be like as a mom. You know, when you as a man tap into those types of questions and that type of extrapolation, you know, of like, hey, what type of mom would this woman be? You know, what type of experiences, what type of nurturing spirit does she have? What type of affection, you know, all of that, I think, is tempered, if you will, once the child comes into actual being. And, you know, your wife becomes a mother for the first time, you start to see just how nurturing that spirit is and how women have such an amazing ability to bring comfort to the home, to, you know, us as husbands, and to the children. And just their mere presence is enough, you know, to accomplish that. And of course, men have a different role that provides comfort in a different way of, you know, like maybe more like security, more like safety, more like, you know, it's a different type of comfort than one that is provided by mom and the wife in the relationship. So without further ado, we're going to get into the content. It's today's topic is, why should men get married, even though it seems like they shouldn't, in today's society in particular? And if you guys like the content, if you're newcomers, make sure that you guys go out onto Spotify or to Apple Podcasts and give us a rating. That'll really help people see that, you know, that we're bringing content that that speaks to you, and share it with people that you think will enjoy it. Give us a like, comment, and subscribe on YouTube, Facebook, etc. We're also on Instagram. So without further ado, we're gonna get into the content. And I just want to also take one extra, you know, minute or so to say thank you to you guys for sticking with Engaging Walk and being part of the experience that we have. You know, we reread a lot of the comments. We read a lot of like what people have said about the show and have talked about the podcast so far. And, you know, we love reading those comments and we love having that feedback from you guys. So I'm just looking forward to more is like why I keep like harping on it so much. So hopefully that makes sense. That that interaction of seeing what people like, seeing what people don't like is really rewarding, because I have a lot of these types of conversations with people in my private life, friends, family, coworkers, and it's really rewarding to have these conversations. It's because it really improves lives and it really improves people's perspective and well-being. And and one such conversation that I had with a coworker about a year ago, you know, I'm gonna keep privacy and keep things, you know, not so specific that people could determine like who this person is, But I'll share a little bit about how that conversation went and how it relates to this topic today. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into it. All right, so today we're talking about this idea of, like, why should men get married in today's society? Because it seems like there's not a whole lot of reasons why they should. Because it doesn't really seem like there's a whole lot of really good reasons, to be frank, in this society. The way that it's been developed over the course of the last 40, 50 years or so has made it really difficult for men in particular to gain some type of advantage in marriage. So there are advantages. It's just that there a lot of them have been changed or reduced over time, or things have changed, you know, sometimes for good reasons initially, and then those reasons become totally, you know, warped and changed over time. So let's get into that. Number one thing is divorce. About, I think, 70% of all divorces are initiated by women. And during that time, you know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in a divorce. For example, losing, you know, a man losing access to his children, a man losing access to, you know, businesses, finances, having to pay alimony for many, many years, and animosity and disconnect between the former spouse and the children as a result of the divorce. Now, I haven't done a whole lot of research into the main reasons why divorces occur, but they're typically due to adultery or other irreconcilable differences. But I would imagine that adultery is up there. So divorce is for sure number one, and all of the other complications that go along with it. Divorce is very common. Divorces are very commonly initiated by the wife, and divorces lead in most cases to the man losing a great deal, if not most, access to children and to, you know, resulting in alimony and resulting in other unfavorable financial situations that can set men back for many, many years, if not the rest of their lives. So there's, of course, that major danger. And signing a prenuptial agreement or even discussing one can, you know, as we discussed in a previous episode, that can, like, lay the groundwork for that mistrust and can lay that groundwork for an eventual divorce down the line. That, like, it's almost like you're walking the tread line of that contract of, like, well, you know, like, a great example is, like, if you've ever seen that Better Call Saul episode where he's, like, trying to get, like, Saul Goodman is, like, trying to get, not divorced, he's trying to get fired from his job, because if he gets fired, he maintains his sign-on agreement, that his sign-on agreement or his, coming onto the company, they gave him a bonus, and he would have to pay back that bonus if he quits. So he wants to quit. So instead of quitting, he does things that are like, the things that can get him fired, but things that can't get him fired for, like, negligence or something that's, like, very serious, and that would also be a breach of his contract. His way of getting fired is just, like, by being, like, an office nuisance. You know, it's just, like, it's better to get rid of him, and then he gets to keep his money, his sign-on bonus, than it would be to keep him there and, you know, deal with his shenanigans and deal with his antics. So that is, like, something that can be analogous to, like, how people can deal with a prenuptial agreement. If you have all these stipulations in there, then you're, like, kind of, like, walking the line of, okay, well, if I do this, then, you know, she will be, not get caught, etc. You guys get what I'm talking about. It can lay the groundwork for a legalese interpretation of distrust and dysfunction in the marriage, and set it up so that you do end up getting divorced down the line, and you do it in a way that is still, you know, difficult and gut-wrenching for the children, but in a way that, like, sort of like mitigates some of the damages, but you were kind of heading there because you set it up in that way in the beginning. Yeah, so hopefully that makes sense, but because it's kind of like a, maybe that should be its own episode. But anyways, so these there are these major hurdles of divorce and all the things that are associated with divorce that are an impediment to many men seeking wives and seeking to get married in American society. Now, the second one is that there is a lot of different changes that have happened in the last 40 years or so, some of them good, some of them bad, in terms of male, female, you know, husband-wife dynamics. You know, in my household alone, you have three generations of husbands and wives. And in the second generation, a whole plethora of husbands and wives due to divorce and remarrying, divorce, remarrying. But with my grandparents, they were the only married couple that they knew. And they were the only partners that they ever had. That was the norm back then, that, you know, at around 16, they would start dating, you know, at that or shortly after that, they would get married and then they would stay together until they died. That was the norm during my grandparents' era, time, especially where they grew up in Greece. And then they took those values with them when they moved to the United States. So during that generation, that was the norm, that, you know, the couple would wed very young, like 17, 18, somewhere around that time period. And then they would, you know, they would be married for, you know, the rest of their lives until death do them part. And then the next generation, like my mother's generation and my father's generation, you know, they experience a lot of divorce and a lot of, you know, things that happen in men, relationships between men and women that sort of like enabled that to be easier and to be more socially accepted. That's not to say that like the previous generation didn't have a lot of those, difficulties. They just, it wasn't socially accepted in order, you know, to have a divorce, you know, especially in Christian families and particularly in Roman Catholic families. So that generation also had a lot of issues with men leaving the family, and they would essentially have to become the de facto caretakers of the children, and the wife would lose the children more often than the men would. And laws, I think, in the 1960s started favoring more women to be able to have custody of the men, of the children, because of that fact that, you know, that they would have to be provided for, and that's what led to like alimony laws and things like that. So there was a real need to take care of spouses once they did have a divorce back then. And in terms of like monetary, you know, compensation, and then also in order to ensure that women because women were not allowed to have credit cards, they were not allowed to have, you know, their own banking. So that made it very difficult back then for women to take custody of children in the event of a divorce. And most often they went over to the men because they could financially support the children. Usually the house was in their name, but over time these things have changed. And a lot of people argue, which is a really fair argument, that they sort of changed, and instead of them being weighted against women, which how they were in the past, that now they're weighted against men. And there's a lot of validity to that, especially in terms of when you look at divorce proceedings and when you look at child custody, that these all primarily favor women. Now, there's even a lot of cases in which women that who were on drugs and who were the guilty party in terms of like the divorce received custody of the children. And this was a phenomenon that occurred a lot throughout the 1980s especially, and then went into the 1990s. But there's been a lot of rectifying these issues in the courts since then. So, you know, I became acutely aware of that when during the 90s and 2000s, because, you know, I went through that with my family, and I started learning a little bit about how, like, the process went, but not enough, you know, but became more curious as I got older and started learning more about it. So the next generation, I feel like, you know, now we're starting to see divorce rates go down with generation, you know, with the current generation. And I think a lot of that has to do with, like, just particularly how high those numbers were and the statistics were, again, going back into the 80s and 90s and the 70s of, you know, you essentially had like a whole generation of children who experienced that that hardship, you know, and were determined not to have that happen in their families. So there's a lot of promising data and a lot of promising statistics that go into that. But, you know, that's still something that is being talked about. I see a lot on online in particular that says, like, hey, you know, these are the numbers. They're still not in men's favor. Therefore, you shouldn't put yourself out there like that. And you shouldn't have a family. You shouldn't have, you know, a wife. And you're just going to expose yourself to unnecessary risk, particularly in terms of, like, your financial future. And so another thing that I was about to get into is that a lot of, like, what they call, like, third wave feminism really made it difficult for men, particularly going from mid to late 1990s until present day, to find suitable partners here in the United States, what they call, like, Western women. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that, but there's also a lot of, like, this is totally case-by-case basis. That's not every woman, that's not, you know, even probably a majority, but there's enough of a presence of that type of mentality that is, you know, pervasive, that there's a perception, at least, that men feel like, oh, I can't find a suitable partner here in the United States. And my wife and I were just talking about how, you know, women feel the same way, that it's very difficult to find a good man. And, you know, and after having a lot of conversations with her, you know, her friends and her family, you know, women on that side, that, yeah, they do have a lot of issues in terms of, like, finding a good man. So, you know, maybe that could be, like, another episode. I know that my wife wants to talk about it. So, but today we're going to be focusing on, like, why men should engage in marriage, even though society, at least online, is telling them not to do it. Okay, so this notion of, like, you know, third wave feminism having a negative impact on men being able to find suitable partners in the United States, I think also does have a lot of validity to it, because a lot of these women, you can, are perceived at least as, like, not willing to really be true partners, that they see themselves as, like, above men, that men really don't bring anything to the table. They don't bring anything to the relationship that, you know, they can just get from a female relationship in terms of, like, even like a friendship. And to the point where, like, a lot of women just view, or not a lot, but a number of women view, like, the option of, like, in vitro fertilization as, like, hey, you know, I want to have a baby, but I don't want to have a husband. So therefore I can just do this process and get, you know, a sperm donor and have what I want. And I don't want the husband. I don't want the family that includes that type of figure in, you know, in the relationship. And there's been a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of people talking about this, that it seems like it's probably not as pervasive as people make it out to be. It's probably something that's more, you know, something that's affecting more, like, maybe young people, like, probably people in their early 20s to mid 20s. And, you know, maybe, like, a certain number of them sort of, like, grow out of that phase. But a certain number of them don't. And nevertheless, a lot of men have this perception that, like, oh, if I find a woman, you know, that's suitable, then, like, you know, she might change on me. I know, like, this is something that a lot of people have concerns about, is, you know, a man might be looking for, like, a traditional woman, and they might have, like, a traditional relationship, but because she's Western and she's, you know, grew up in the United States, that who's to say later on that she can't, you know, decide that she's actually a man and, like, you know, or wants to have an open relationship and wants to have multiple partners. And, you know, these things do happen. It's not like they don't. But that leads to the things that you can do when you are vetting and going through the dating process with people, or like at least like the talking stage, is trying to figure out, like, how susceptible is this person to change? How constant how constant is their personality? And, you know, maybe you don't have enough data to go off of it because, like, let's say you're in your 30s and you're like, okay, well, I want to meet and find somebody in the next few years and have a family, you know. But all of that is contingent upon finding someone that is a suitable partner that has the same values as you or very, very similar values and displays a lot of the characteristics that show that they are reliable, that they're stable, and that you can rely on them in terms of, like, you know, having a family, having shared finance, having, you know, common goals, having common dreams, things that you want to do in life, things that you want to have in terms of, like, a family, you know, how many children you want, and sort of, like, have these discussions early on, which is what Engaging Walk is all about. And then once you uncover, like, okay, yeah, these are the true dreams of this person, these are the true aspirations and goals that they have, that they have hobbies, they have things that they've done since childhood that are still a part of their lives, things that they've been interested in for, you know, many, many years that still hold a lot of weight in their heart. And as you start to see more and more of these things in that person and you start being able to share life together, of course it's a risk. You know, every endeavor that we take, we don't know what the future is. We just can't know. But we can extrapolate based off of, like, who this person is now, how they have been before, and trying to get the best estimate of, like, how they're going to be in the future. And like I was talking about earlier, like, I feel like I've grown to know my wife more after, you know, postpartum, because I'm starting to learn more about her because she's never been a mom before. You know, I've never been a dad before. But those aspects of which I, you know, said to myself, like, oh, I can see her being this type of mom. You know, that nurturing spirit that I saw in her, that nurturing presence that she has, the, you know, how wonderful she is with people, you know, she, that translated so well to motherhood for her. And then I started seeing moments of it, glimpses of it, her nurturing nature when we had a dog together, like we were, you know, raising the dog, and she started using more, like, you know, sweet body language and sweet nurturing, like, type of presence with the dog. And I was like, wow, that's just going to become more tenfold when she when she becomes a mom. And of course that was accurate. So when you start, like, looking for those instances of, like, how does this person react around children? You know, how does this person react around elderly people? How does this person react around people that don't do anything for them? And I think is a good way to judge character of, like, you know, if how the person treats people that can't do anything for them and how well they reciprocate or, you know, give affection towards those individuals speaks a lot to a person's character. So those are all, you know, and of course there's so many other ways that you can do that, but you definitely want to go through, that's not to say that you don't want to go through a good vetting process, because of course the dangers are there. And then, of course, like I was saying earlier, we can't predict the future. But the benefits, I think, far outweigh the stigmatization that's been going on about how people, you know, men in particular, shouldn't engage in marriage and shouldn't engage in, you know, in family life. You know, this sort of, like, playboy kind of mentality of, like, oh, yeah, you can have women, but, you know, don't settle down on just one. It's going to ruin your life. I think, like, that is probably, that type of mentality, I think, is probably worse than going through the process of, like, of divorce. Because at least when you have, a family, you know, you have something. You have experiences that were true, you know, to who you were, and like that nature of like wanting to care for somebody and wanting to care for, you know, your family, as opposed to this hedonistic lifestyle of just coming across pleasure when it's available and essentially just being really selfish and only caring about yourself and your needs. That I think you have to, you know, go through a process of growing up and finding comfort and finding pleasure in taking care of your friends, your family. And then that is what's going to give you the fuel to take care of your real family once all of the foundation has been established in order for you to be able to do that. Of course, it's not easy, but that's kind of like the point of doing it, is that it's not easy, but it's rewarding. And of course, that might not be available for everybody, but if you are on the fence of thinking like, you know, I do want to have a family, but so many people are throwing all these statistics at me and saying like, oh, I don't think that like that would be, you know, a wise thing to do. Of course, there's, you know, again, there's lots of dangers and things that are rewarding. But if you go through the process, you talk to people that have successful marriages, that have been successfully married for many years, and you look to examples like that, and you learn more about like what it takes, then of course those risks become mitigated by your level of preparation. And then also they become, you know, the hurdle that you need to get through in order to be able to have a successful relationship. And the rewards of that are very profound, much more profound than, you know, a hedonistic playboy lifestyle, you know. So that's all I really got to say about that for today. We're going to be wrapping this episode up. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. And we'll hope to see you guys next time. If you like the episode, if you want to share it with people, that would be great. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, give us a like and a rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That would really do a lot to let people know that you're enjoying the content and that you want to hear more of it. So as always, like, subscribe, comment. We love to hear you guys' feedback, your input, so that we know like what type of topics resonate with you guys and things that you would like to hear in the future. With that, I'm signing out, and we'll see you guys next time. Take care.